Just a quick warning that we will be discussing themes that some listeners might be sensitive to, including death, abortion, pregnancy loss, sex and sexuality, abusive relationship dynamics, and big existential questions. This is an unbleeped version of some disorganized thoughts as they come to us. Hello and welcome to A Hopeless Endeavor. Unfortunately, because we are kind of disorganized, I don't have Sam's beautiful voice to introduce us to part two of our discussion on the album artwork of Ys. So it's just me. So sorry about that. But this is our last part of the discussion. My name is Nikki. I am from Ithaca, and Sam is wonderful, and Sam is from Vancouver, and she's awesome. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. The next one out on next Saturday will be our first episode on Colleen. But until then, please enjoy / tolerate our super disorganized, sort of scrambling, rambling discussion on the gorgeous artwork for Ys, which I guess will be our last discussion on Ys, which is super sad. So email us or DM us or whatever if you have any questions or comments or thoughts or anything like that. We would love to hear from you guys. Thanks for listening. Bye. Did you find anything on either the white flower to the furthest left? It looks like almost like a, I don't know, daisy or something.
See, that one's especially tricky because we're not seeing its face. We're just seeing the underside of its petals. So I don't think I even bothered trying to figure out what that one was. I think I wanted to assume that it was like maybe the jasmine or maybe like the underside of the pennyroyal. But I do think that the little tiny ones all over the crown were maybe baby's breath.
Yes, that's exactly what I have too.
Okay. Just as a fun fact, contains seeds which are shaped like teeny little snail shells.
Really?
I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
That's really cool. So baby's breath. I mean, just the name of the flower itself is super like almost morbid, maybe not morbid. Like I looked at the symbol.
No, very much morbid. Yeah.
It's weird, baby's breath. But I looked at the symbolism and it says like it's supposed to symbolize like innocence and like purity and like whatever. But yeah, it also just makes me super think of a fetus that might have been present throughout the album. And then if that one that you were talking about, Sam, or sorry, that I like asked you about, and then you said like we can only see the underside of it. It's the like leftmost flower that you can see on her crown, but not the front of it. If that one is a daisy, and the only reason that I thought it was a daisy is because they have a bunch of like really skinny petals.
Yeah.
If that is a daisy, which it may or may not be, something I found about the symbolism of daisies is that they also symbolize innocence and purity. But in Norse mythology, the daisy is Freya's sacred flower. Freya is the goddess of love, beauty, and fertility. And as such, the daisy came to symbolize childbirth, motherhood, and new beginnings. So if that's a thing, then we can obviously find a connection there between some of the album content, the record content, and the daisy. And then also, I think Celtic people, ancient Celtic people, associated daisies with death, because they believed when a child died, especially when a child died in childbirth, that the gods would sprinkle their grave with daisies to cheer up the grieving parents. Yeah. Heavy shit, but who the fuck knows? Maybe it's not even a daisy.
I think the last thing I have for this crown is just that, like, baby's breath can also symbolize everlasting love, but is traditionally given to mothers to celebrate a new birth, which is like, ooh.
Oh, God. Yeah. That sound. And
then, yeah, and in that interview you mentioned that, like, the artist preferred that her forehead be shown.
Yeah.
And I think that that, like, crown is a really interesting way of doing that. And I also just had to pay attention so much to the length of her bangs. Like, she would have had to grow her bangs out for so long.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I got bangs a year and a half ago and started growing them out at the beginning of quarantine. That was in February, March. They're not grown out yet.
Where are they at now?
Maybe halfway down my cheek. Like,
so long.
I mean, if the painting took a year, I guess she had time, right?
Yeah, and then I read somewhere else that he didn't actually do it with her sitting for him, and he didn't paint her with based off of any photo, but, like, he for some reason wanted to do it, like, in the following way. So he, like, took he, like, looked at and studied a bunch of pictures of her, and then without having those pictures in front of him and without having her sitting in front of him, painted her based on memory. And I think that maybe, he didn't say this explicitly, but I think that maybe that might be to get to, like, lean into the, like, essence of the person. Like, the thing that sticks with you of them will be more prominent if it's just in your memory, like, rather than being based on their actual physical features. So maybe he just made them longer. But yeah, I mean, also it seems like her hair grows like fucking weeds because she like cut it short and now it's already kind of long again. So
yeah.
Anyway, did we say too when we were talking about the wheat / barley, I think you did, the connection of wheat to the sickle and to Demeter?
Just very loosely. I don't think we had connected it to Demeter.
Okay.
So if you have something on that, go for it.
Just super, super briefly, like, hang on, let me just find the fucking tab. Demeter and wheat. It was just something. Okay, yeah. So in connecting wheat to Demeter, who we had spoken about a bit before, the mother of Persephone. So she was the goddess of agriculture, agriculture, grain, and bread, who sustained mankind with the earth's rich bounty. And she was depicted as a mature woman, often wearing a crown and bearing sheafs of wheat or a cornucopia, a horn of plenty, and a torch. So I just know that Demeter is associated with wheat in that way. And she's like, so I read somewhere too that the word, the name Demeter contains the, I think, Greek word for mother in it. So meter, at least the ancient Greek word for mother, meter. So like she is like in her essence, Demeter is like mother, right? Mother to Persephone. And it's just interesting that, Joanna might have depicted herself in that way, in this mother role, as wearing wheat in the same way that Demeter might have. And then this might be a stretch maybe, but okay. So I was looking, like, it's hard to see even on the vinyl that I have in front of me now, but I also had mentioned that high resolution picture of the album art that I had before. And I like zoomed in super close on the braids, on the wheat. And the wheat looks so much like the braids in Joanna's hair. Cool. They're like painted in a very similar way and in a similar color. And I just didn't know if the braids were maybe supposed to evoke that like mirroring of the stuff that's in her hair. The wheat that's in her hair. But yeah, that's all I have on the wheat stuff.
No, I really like that. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, Sam. Do we move from the crown?
Yeah, can we do the horse?
We can for sure.
Skull instead of the florals.
Of course. Yeah, fuck flowers for now.
So I looked at so many skulls this week.
Me too. And they're all gross.
they're gross. Yeah. And like, I think the thing that throws me with this skeleton is like the eye sockets.
Yes, man. They're so far out.
They're so far out. And I didn't find a single creature that I thought matched it exactly. The closest thing I came to was a horse.
Yeah, me too.
And it just made me kept thinking of some, like, I don't know, like random creature from Rick and Morty or something. But obviously that's not what she was thinking. So I landed on a horse. I think thematically that makes sense. And then I was like, I don't know, does it's like extra big head and eye sockets have some like reference to that horse sense wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, totally. For me, at least monkey and bear is like where the horses are most prevalent, right? So like the horses mm-hmm. getting loose is the whole thing that sets them on their adventure. And by the way, just in reading and trying to find fucking something about that was written about the album art today, I came across this thing that I had wanted to just mention to you where I felt a little bit vindicated because she had said in some interview about Monkey and Bear, she was like, yeah, so like it's the song starts out in this this scene that I like really intended to be confusing for the listener, because we know that there's like the dancing bear and the organ grinding monkey, but and we know that they're in captivity, but like, why are they on a farm? And I was like, oh, Sam and I said that same thing. Why are they on a farm?
The displacement was so confusing.
Right.
For sure.
So I was glad to hear her say, like, it's intentional. I wanted you to be confused. But yeah, anyways.
Thank God.
Thank God. We got something right, kind of. Yeah, okay. So I also, like, dude, I think maybe this skull of all the things on the album art I spent most time on, not this time around looking at it, but like maybe 2 years ago, I was obsessed with this fucking skull. Oh my God. I lost my mind. I like posted all over about it being like, what is it? Lots of people thought it was a cow skull. So I got really into looking up Hindu symbolism, because like Ra, I think, is the goddess of the sun, but then somehow also associated with cows. But now, based on my having seen somebody who had proximity to both Joanna and the artist describe it as a horse skull, now I'm pretty convinced it's a fucking horse skull, and that was just completely wasted time, and I was seeing connections where they did not exist. But yeah, I think that horses as representing freedom, but then like a dead horse representing, death of freedom or some kind of like bad omen that comes along with that. Also, interestingly, I had looked up just like not in reference to anything specific on the album cover, but just reflecting on the prevalence of water throughout the whole thing. I just looked up we've been like researching a bunch of Greek mythology connections to this album. Like, why haven't we looked up Poseidon and his like mm-hmm. symbology? And I didn't really find anything super interesting other than that I didn't have a whole lot of time to look into it super deeply, but the most interesting thing I found that it pertains to this album art is that he was also the god of horses. So there might be a bit of a connection there. I'm not sure.
Okay, so I do have a note about Poseidon in reference to the, are they even florists? The long, kind of fluffy, purpley-red flower that's hanging directly below the horse's head.
The fucking ones that I told you. I have no idea what they are. Yes, yes.
So, maybe a long shot.
Okay.
But I think it's maybe amaranth.
Okay.
And in turns, just in mentioning Poseidon in terms of Greek mythology, Amaranthus was a hunter who was loved by Artemis, and Artemis was like a protectress during childbirth. But at some point, Amaranthus insulted Poseidon, who was the god of Sea of Storms and apparently of horses as well. He was drowned. Poseidon drowned Amaranthus by a giant wave, and Artemis turned him into the amaranth flower.
Wow.
So just hearing you mention that connection to Poseidon in both of those aspects is really cool.
Yeah, that's super cool, Sam, the Amaranth connection. And also, like you said, that it is directly under the horse, too. Mm-hmm. Like, touching almost the horse, right? Like,
yeah.
No, that's super, super cool. I mean, there's also, too, the... in reference to the horse skull, if that's in fact what it is, the East Myth. So I know that she only came up with the title for the album after all the songs were written, but I don't know if that title came before or after the album art was drawn. And we know
that's a good question.
Yeah. We know that based on the myth of the city of East, that the king of the city fled the city on a horse and very probably pushed her off the horse, right? So that she was left to perish, the daughter off the horse, so that she was left to perish with the city. Okay. That's all I have on the horse.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot either.
There's also, Sam, that just like that one, like, if you look at the horse and look at its left eye, but our right, on our right, then above that, doesn't it look like there's like a spot where a horn would go or something? Like, what is that pokey outy thing?
Yeah, it does.
The fuck is that?
And like the fact that like the ragged edges of what I'm assuming is like its nose are kind of unlike some of the skeletons I found too. I don't know. And just a quick Google, I see that like a horse skull is used in like protection magic, which I think is cool, but
super cool.
I don't know. In pre-Christian Germanic magic, placing a curse on an enemy involves sacrificing a horse and putting the head on a pole facing in the direction of the person cursed. This was to direct the wrath of the gods against the person. It's facing towards us though, so
yeah,
I don't think she meant to curse us.
I also found in the next episode that we're recording, Sam and I are going to be talking about Colleen, and that song just like directly references, not directly, I guess, but very indirectly, almost directly references the myth of the Selkie.
I love the Selkie.
Yes. Okay. So in a very similar vein, I was looking up just like dead horse symbolism stuff, and I found a Scottish folklore creature called the Kelpie, K-E-L-P-I-E. They're all such like kind of cute names. The little Kelpie, or the water Kelpie. And it is a shape-shifting spirit inhabiting lakes in Scottish folklore. It is a Celtic legend. However, analogs exist in other cultures. It is usually described as a black horse-like creature able to adopt human form, blah, 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 blah. Okay, wait. And then there was something else. So basically, they live in water, which I thought was interesting because of the prevalence of water, obviously, on this album. Mm-hmm. And like in any body of water. And they will... like trick humans by embodying whatever shape is convenient for them or like most useful for them. That's pretty much all I have. That's all I found that was like perhaps directly relevant. I don't know.
No, that's really cool. I hadn't heard of that before.
Okay. What is our next endeavor?
So these, and moving counterclockwise, there's like this vase with flowers in the corner. And honestly, most of them, I don't know what they are. Just like much with like the vines or the greens in the crown, besides being like attached to the florals, if there's any extra there, I have no idea.
Me either.
I do really want to think that these like really cool fluffy like cloud-like flowers are maybe thistle.
Oh.
It's a bit of a stretch because Thistle is honestly a lot more purple.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know, maybe he took some like
artistic liberty.
Yeah, with those.
With that and the
because
horse
I didn't though. Find anything else, and like the thistle can kind of look a little bit more like a dandelion. It's in certain phases of its life. And if it is a thistle, other than like the direct correlation to some of her lyrics, there is this Greek story about Autonus. And that name by itself just means man with a mind of his own, which made me think of our partner in Only Skin.
Totally.
And Autonus was a shitty farmer. He had a bunch of horses, but he left the care of these horses to his wife and his five children, because he left like all of this husbandry work to his family. The land they lived on produced no crops, but only rushes and thistles. And that's why all of his children were named after such plants.
Mm.
And in this especially brutal story, one son named Erodius, who loved these horses, he always kept them. He like took the best care of them. Out of all the siblings, he always kept them on like lush, rich pasture. But one day, another son, Anthus, drove them to what I'm assuming is like a really distant and unfamiliar pasture. And the horses began to starve. Mm. And out of hunger, they fucking ate Anthus.
Oh my God.
I know. So their family was very panicked and very weak while this was happening. But because the father was so shitty at growing crops, they were all super weak and they weren't able to save Anthus. And then out of pity, looking at your face,
way more violent than I thought it was going to get, but okay.
Oh man. Out of pity, Zeus and Apollo turned the entire family into birds. Autonus became a stone curlew. Hippodamia became a lark. Asanthius became a thistle finch, and the others became birds whose Greek names are the same as their personal names when they were humans.
Man, we got Erodius, lark and finch.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Erodius and Anthus' servant was transformed into a black and white heron. And then it also made me think that like maybe those teeny tiny flowers in her crown, if not baby's breath, might also be like the small blooms of rushes.
Oh,
I don't know.
And she mentions rushes too, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. So. Good job, Sam.
It's a stretch.
Everything that we're talking about is a stretch, though I actually feel that way. Like, I don't fucking know. The thing that I had not at all decided that it was, but, like, thought maybe those, like, fluffy, like, I don't even know how to describe them, like, cloud-like flowers in the vase were, are bog cotton.
Oh, cool.
Or I think grass cotton or cotton grass is also known as. But yeah, I don't know. If you want to look up a picture, tell me what you think. I couldn't find any interesting symbolism from it though. So like, I don't even know what there is to gain if it is that.
I mean, they're fluffy for sure.
Yeah, but and they're Irish, which there's like an Irish symbolism, I guess. But like, that's like the only thing I have. I like yours way better though. And there's like direct relevance to the album based on your interpretation, so I'm way more down with that.
And honestly, the rest of the flowers I'm really not sure. Yeah. So we have like the amaranth, we have the maybe thistle, maybe bog cotton, and then there's like those drooping yellow flowers that we can't see the face of any of them. Yeah. They're all looking away from us. They're all facing away from us. And you know what I didn't think about until now? Where's like, is there a light source here? Like, none of the florals are facing any specific direction, even the ones on the ground.
Yeah.
And then there's almost like a, I want to say it's like a daisy-like orangey flower in the middle of either the bog cotton or the thistle. And I'm not sure. Looks, because of like the narrowness of the petals, I'm not sure.
It looks a tiny bit to me, but maybe not. Like a black-eyed season.
Oh, sure.
But I think those are more yellow, though. Like, I don't know if there's an orange variety. But
there could be. So many of these flowers have so much variety. Yes. And that's what's so hard about identifying them.
I don't know how any flower does this. Exactly.
I don't know if you found this in trying to identify these, but there would be like these, like when you Google like fluffy white flower dandelion, like there would be like a single image of like 65 different white flowers. And you'd be like, okay, perfect. Yes. Okay. And you start looking through all them. You're like, nope, none of them.
That is my exact experience with literally every flower that I like Googled a vague description of. Literally everyone. Like there was not one where I was like, oh yeah, that's totally it. Except for Baby's Breath. Actually, Baby's Breath was the only one that worked.
Yeah. But even like the pictures, like I used to, like my family had a cabin growing up and we would collect, my mom loved Baby's Breath. We would collect it often, but the Baby's Breath that I remember collecting didn't necessarily look like the ones in her crown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the ones in my memory when I was like, I don't know. But all of the flowers here, none of them are common anywhere I've lived.
Me either.
So it was especially tricky.
Yeah. Yeah, I have nothing else for that vase. I'm mad at that vase. Cool. I don't even understand the presence so of that vase. Like, why is any of that there? I don't know.
Yeah.
I know that she wanted to have a room full of flowers and decadence, so maybe it's just to... and also, maybe if there is a druidism theme throughout this, like, I know very little about druidism, but from what I do know, it's just a religion that is like adjacent kind of to Christianity, but it's like more like a pagan religion, right? So like it centers like nature and like the importance of every living thing rather than this more like monotheistic. I really don't know, but it's more nature centered and more pagan than like Christian religion is. And so maybe it's just like bringing the nature into focus here and like into this person's personal life. It could be symbolic of that, because also like just skipping ahead on the ground, there are like inexplicably these flowers that are growing out of the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
And it looks like she's high up based on her, maybe she's like in a belfry or something. She's like high up based on the view from the window.
Oh, maybe she's in a belfry. I like that.
I hadn't thought of that until right now. But yeah, it looks like she's high up. But then like, where the fuck are these fucking flowers coming from? Who knows? Maybe it's a dream. I don't know.
It's magic. And like these like really like magical florals in contrast to like the heavy woods and stone and like the drape of the curtain too is really interesting. The vase is a really deep blue that like the table that the vase is sitting on is really interesting as well.
Like I want all those furniture pieces at my house. Like I want to have this.
When I was researching the chair, like I got on eBay and was like, one of these chairs cost me. Like it's incredible. And I wonder if that was a choice of hers to include, or if that was more of like at like the liberty of the artist.
Dude, yeah. The dude. Yeah, sorry, the artist. You're like I feel like I don't know if it's the wine's fault or just my feeling a little bit liberated since we got through the flowers. But I've just gotten to this point in this recording where I'm like, oh, this is like a free-for-all session now. Like, we can just have fun with this now that we've, like, done the heavy shit. I'm just gonna, like, pour more wine.
I felt that, like, heaviness above me all day, for sure.
Now it's just like, I don't know why the flowers are so fucking intimidating. Actually, I do, because, like, they're...
Because they're like there, and there is an answer to
it. Yes, exactly.
Like there is, she chose.
Oh my god.
especially the flowers in her crown. She chose, I'm assuming, that specific flower for a reason.
Yes.
And I want to know what it is and why.
Me fucking
but it's
too.
Really hard.
It's really hard. Really hard.
In retrospect, what I should have done is taken this album with me to like a local plant store
oh
and
my
just
God.
Asked.
That's a good someone. Idea. I might still do
Maybe
that.
Maybe we'll do a follow-up episode because I have plant points to use at the one down the street.
Depending on how much we have to say, we both have shit to talk about to add on to East stuff that we didn't cover. So maybe we can have a
bonus episode.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there can be another bonus episode. Okay. Actually, just so that we're actually past flowers.
Yeah.
The last one.
Let's do the bottom one.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a whole bunch of the same kind of flower, just like surrounding the bottom, kind of coming up through the chair, around the chair, just from the bottom up. Do you have a theory on what those flowers are? I think they're bluebells. I have no fucking idea.
So there was a Reddit thread where someone asked specifically what these ones are.
Oh.
Some people thought they were maybe moonflower or bindweed. And I kind of leaned more towards a species of morning glory. Mm. There's like 25 fucking species of morning glories, but half of them are endemic to California, which I was like, oh, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
And they're also, I think what's really interesting about these two is like, at least on the vinyl that I'm holding, like the difference in colors between the vines is really interesting. Like the ones that seem to be closer to her body seem to be a deeper brown.
Oh.
And as they get further away from her, they seem to have a little bit more life to them.
Oh my God, Sam, you're a fucking brilliant genius. I'm so into that observation.
Like, do you see, like, right underneath the sickle, the leaf?
Yes.
Like, that leaf is very brown.
Yes.
And then, like, close to her, like, left elbow, that one's a little bit more brown as well.
Yeah.
And as they curve around the chair, they have more brown to them.
Into that so much.
And then we see like what I'm assuming is like a little aphid on the leaves. There's like a little caterpillar guy.
Yeah.
I want to say a bumblebee.
I wanted to say that too, but it took me a while to get there, like suckling on the whatever it is, morning glory / bluebell / whatever. Yeah, I like your morning glory theory. That matches the shape of the flower better than blue. But what I looked up to try to figure out what flower those ones were is just flowers that are shaped like bells.
Oh, I just love the idea of it. I didn't think of it as being a bell shape at all. And I really like that. I talked a lot about bells and sodas tonight.
Yeah, you did. And actually, that like is the only thing that like made me have this fucking ridiculous thought that I'm so glad I have like three glasses of wine in me before I say it, because it's so ridiculous and yet I can't shake it. So just hear me out. It's probably ridiculous. It's fine.
I'm here for it.
Thank you. So yes, if you look at these flowers, they're very much bell shaped and they also have the word you taught me, Sam, a clapper inside of them. So like that bell dangly thing that like makes the
cool.
sound. Yeah. These flowers on the bottom here have that sort of rough shape. And then you had also said, like, look, the shape, I guess, of the bell and then the clapper inside are meant to represent or like sometimes do represent male and female sexuality.
Totally, yeah.
And like obviously with that comes like reproductive stuff. And so like if it is a bee getting the nectar from this plant, it's like both at once this like symbol of like reproduction reproduction and also like maybe sexuality a little bit, like mm-hmm. if the symbolism about the bell stuff being sexual is right, or even if it's not, like just the reproductive features of a flower being brought to light here, I think is cool.
Yeah, and I think even if it is a morning glory, those themes mm-hmm. make a lot of sense as well. Like
yeah.
The symbolism of morning glory can be like unrequited love or love that is in vain, but morning glories are also used to represent just like the general mortality of life. Purple morning glory flowers specifically can symbolize nobility, royalty, and beauty. I have that in China, morning glories symbolize that lovers can only meet on one day of the year.
Ooh.
And if two people fall in love, they will neglect their responsibilities. Once they ignore their duties, the gods will start to show their dissatisfaction. And like, who knows what responsibilities we're talking about, responsibility to each other or who knows. In Victorian literature, morning glory signify that love has never ended or love that was never reciprocated. Some Christians believe that morning glories relate closely to the finite nature of life as we know it on earth. That might be part of like the Druidism, that every single flower represents a life, and life is represented by the sun's daylight hours, which makes me think of like the bell that tolls for every person as well.
That oneness that we were talking about a lot in Sadness and Diamonds.
Yeah.
Sam, I am actually now totally on board with your having identified this as a morning glory.
This was someone on Reddit. It was like an old ass Reddit thread, but I went with it for sure.
I'm going to credit it to you for the purposes of this conversation. Okay, because actually one thing I forgot to talk about when we were talking about the view outside the window. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just bear with me. I will bring it back to the flower, I promise. So yep,
no worries.
I was looking at the color of the sky and then also focusing on the fact that we can see the North Star, this tiny, itty-bitty little North Star. And I was like, are we supposed to think that this is dawn or dusk, right? Mm. So it is, regardless, a state of flux, right? A state of changing. And as she has said, and as we have said, this album is like a lot about change and this like transformation from one thing into the other. And then also just more directly, there are a bunch of references and themes about night and day in the song. That contrast is present. And so that the artist chose to depict the sky as purple is like this very just indeterminate way of saying like, are we right before, are we just about to escape the night and we're just like getting into the day, or are we just heading into night, heading into this darkness, right? Okay, so that's one thought, and I meant to say that before, but now looking too at the color of the flowers that we were just talking about and contrasting that with the color of the sky, I think they're like the same color. Like there's very... It's like more reflected in those flowers than it is in anything else in the picture.
Yeah, for sure.
So if it is morning glory, then like maybe it's the morning. Maybe she's made it through the night. This narrator has made it through the night. Because it is an interesting choice to make the sky not black if you're going to depict a star.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I have.
No, that's really cool.
Okay. Now,
so I don't think we need to talk about her clothes, really,
no.
Or her hair, because in that interview she straight up said, these are my regular clothes.
Yeah, I think like one of the indications that this is not like a Renaissance painting and not just like a medieval representation of what's going on is like there's a little heart on her belt, right? Like it like seems like a very like 70s-ish belt rather than a... you know, medieval belts. But yeah, these are just her clothes. She wanted to be in jeans. The guy was like, I'm not painting you in jeans. So
I would love to see it in jeans.
Me too.
That would be a really cool contrast to the rest of it.
Yeah, I also want that like peasant shirt that she has on underneath her black shirt. But okay, so right now, because we're not going clockwise anymore, because we've reached a full circle, I don't know where to start. I guess.
Your choice.
Let's
moth or sickle?
Both. Let's do sickle.
Okay.
So for me, I have sickle that relates to Demeter, that relates to that whole myth that we were talking about before, right? Sickle relates to Demeter because of wheat. Sickle is used to remove wheat, right? Which is also... associated with motherhood. Wheat itself is associated with fertility. So all those connections.
I think also with death, though, although I always confuse a sickle with a scythe.
Yeah. So when I was first doing this research, I was looking at a scythe, and it wasn't until, honestly, I got an Instagram message from one of our followers who was like, oh, I think that maybe the sickle means this, that I was like, fuck, of course it's a sickle. Like, god damn it.
Yeah. I just looked up sickle death, and I'm only getting sickle cell stuff, and that's not what I mean. Although, like, there is the, in Sawdust and Diamonds, the dove swings a low sickle arc from its perch in the dark.
Yeah. And now that you say that, you know, the sickle arc that this dove is flying could be linked to, like, the shape of the clouds or the smoke or whatever that are in, like, that cyclical form cut off by the curtain as well.
Yeah, totally.
Like, maybe depicting the flight path of the dove.
Yep. That's cool. Oh, that's really cool. The dove swings the low sickle arc. There is something that is flying in the thing that we see, but it's just out of sight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could bring to mind that flight pattern of the dove as well. I like that.
Yeah, I want to pull that curtain back.
God, a little bit. Me too. Let's be on that curtain. Me too.
I have a similar thing for sickle. Typically used for harvesting or reaping grain crops, which makes me think of like the threshing of the seed that we talked about in whatever episode that we talked about that. But also we got an Instagram message where one of our listeners tied the sickle to possibly like a reference of the critique of capitalism that's happening in London.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
And like the hammer and sickle as a symbol to represent proletarian solidarity, like the union between the peasantry and the working class, but also just like a broader, more general representation of Marxism, communism,
yes,
socialism.
I am so fucking into that.
Yes, I love that. And like, I think the connection there is that, like, you know, Bear is dancing for her life.
Yep.
In this, and also in this case, like, we only have the sickle, we don't have the hammer, so we really only have the representation of the peasant. And I read somewhere that in like the Soviet Union, these two symbols have become gendered, with the sickle more closely identified with women.
Wow.
And the hammer more closely with men.
Oh boy.
Not that they're... Yeah. Also, as kind of a funny joke, in Greek mythology, a sickle or a sold was called harp, H-A-R-P-E.
Oh my god. I love this joke. If it was intentional, I'm into it.
Oh, it was intentional by me. But even in like the pictures that this harp instrument was instrument, this harp like sword, it looks very different than this like curved sickle. But she is very much holding her pinky up.
Oh my god.
Which I think is maybe a reference to like you don't use your pinky when you're playing the harp. So I just like that a lot. Also in Greek mythology, this harp, sickle or sword was used most notably by, and this is brutal, by Cronus to castrate and depose his father Uranus. And depose just means to like remove from political power, and Uranus is the primal Greek god personifying the sky.
Oh.
This harp, the sickle, was given to Cronus by his mother Gaia, and Gaia is the Greek personification of Earth and the ancestral mother of all life. So there's this like battle between Earth and sky.
Good job.
She is the, and this is why I was confused. Gaia is both the mother of Uranus and the mother of Cronus. From whose, okay, let me go back a bit here.
And Cronus is like time, right?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think it is. just thinking of all these like different forces that are playing. But sorry, Sam, keep going.
No, I want to know if that's time. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The king, Cronus, was the king of the Titanes and the god of time. In particular, time when viewed as a destructive, all-devouring force. Oh, cool.
So cool.
So Gaia gave Cronus this harp to castrate his father. Gaia wanted revenge on Uranus because he had cast their children down to Tartarus, which was the deep abyss that is used as a dungeon of torment and suffering for the wicked and as a prison for the Titans. And you said that it was where Sisyphus was sent as well.
Yes.
Wild.
To be tortured, I think, along with some other guy that I hadn't heard of. Super cool, though. Really Holy cool. shit. I'm amazed by all that shit you got from harpsicle.
And that it's called a harp. And then I don't know if... someone intended her to have her pinky up.
Dude, I am obsessed. Okay. This is, again, a super far-fetched theory. But I was looking for a long time today at pinky up symbolism. I watched this YouTube video that, like, this woman who explains, like, manners and, like, what to do, like, etiquette, I guess.
That's what it made me think of, too, like, having your pinky up when you drink.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so yeah. I watched this whole video where this woman was explaining the history of that, and it's actually really fascinating. So, like, people used to eat with their hands before utensils were a thing, right? And they would rich people only. And they would reserve their pinky to dip in spices. And so they'd like get their hands dirty with like food and then use their pinky and dip it in things like salt or sugar and like lick. I'm doing it. You guys can't see, but like lick their pinky and then eat.
Interesting.
So it was like a signifier of a rich person thing. Sam just made a gross out face. It's not the most pleasant thing to think about.
Only
what?
Because I'm thinking these people are not washing their hands at this that's time right. either, too, right?
That's right, like, yeah. So
that's fine.
So, okay. So that was, like, the first thing that I found, like, the history of why rich people held their pinkies up while drinking. Another theory was something to do with, like, when the Chinese brought their tea to Europe, or, like, Europeans discovered, like, tea from Asian cultures. They were served in these different kind of cups so that the cups in Chinese culture didn't have handles. And so Europeans didn't know how to drink them without like burning their fingers. And so they'd hold them kind of awkwardly, like with their fingers up, even though Chinese people did not do that. And then, okay, this is the one that made me like, I was like, oh my God, could this be, or am I being insane and drawing connections where there are none? But I got so excited. So in looking it up, I just so happened to see, I think my search was something like pinky up symbolism. And one of the suggested like search terms was pinky up symbolism STD. And I was like, ooh, let me follow that. So I clicked on that. And the first thing that came up was syphilis finger. And I lost my fucking mind. Okay, so if
which podcast did we talk about that? Which episode?
Only Skin, because we were talking about infidelity. We were talking about Sisyphus and syphilis having the same sort of rhyming thing.
Yes,
and like there was something else that made us think of cheating in that part. And oh, it was the sassafras. Sassafras yes. can be used to treat syphilis
as a cure.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And so we were talking about what that might mean. And as I saw this like syphilis finger, there's two explanations for why it is associated with syphilis. One is that people, both explanations are related back to Paris, or France at least. But one of the explanations was that people who had, because it was such a prevalent STD at that time, people who had syphilis would hold their pinky up to be like, don't flirt with me, I have syphilis. That seems to me just intuitively less plausible than the second explanation, which was that if you had syphilis for a number of years, it would affect your joints such that you couldn't bend them anymore. And because your pinky is like the smallest of your joints on your hand, it got affected, I guess, first or most noticeably or something like that. So that like if you're going to grab a cup, you can't quite grab the cup. You can't close your pinky finger around it because your joint has been affected by syphilis. And so it wasn't that people who had syphilis were trying to warn other people. It was rather that other people, if they saw someone with their pinky up, would say like, this is risky. That person might have syphilis. I don't know if any of that is going on here, but that her pinky is up is fucking weird and it seems important. And I just was so stoked about this potential connection.
No, that's incredible. And it also makes me wonder, because I know as having your pinky up as something that like the most privileged people did, yeah. If it was just like an unavoidable sign of their privilege and like their ability to sleep with whoever the fuck they wanted, that it was less like I'm holding my pinky up because I'm fancy and more like I'm holding my pinky up because I have syphilis.
Yeah, right.
That's so interesting.
I know. I'm so curious about that fucking pinky. Because you're right, like the harp is only played, I read this somewhere, that the harp is only played with like the thumb, index, middle finger, and ring finger, and your pinky is just totally left out of it. And so that could be it. But like, also I read, what's the artist name? Vierling?
Yeah, Benjamin Vierling.
Yeah. I read Vierling say somewhere that his favorite part of the painting, of the album art, is Joanna's hands here. And it just makes me think like, thought went in. It's not just like an accident. Like, okay, imagine if you commissioned some art from somebody for your album and you guys had like extensive conversations about how you want a bunch of shit to symbolize a bunch of shit and like these very specific themes, and he came back and he had just your finger raised. You'd be like, why is my pinky finger raised? That's a weird thing. So I just feel like she must have been in on that in some way.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know what that weight is, but I am stoked on syphilis finger.
I mean, I had very briefly read this like very long paper called The Systematic Reappraisal of the Fifth Finger in Renaissance Paintings. Mm. And there's all of these examples of specifically the pinky being deformed in some way. And I wonder if it is because of that exactly. Mm. Like it mentions rheumatoid arthritis as well, and like an accident as a cause. But I wonder if that might be tied in as well.
So cool. I love how you fucking read a paper on it. That's insane. While we're on our hands too, just real quick, if you look at her left hand, the one that is on our right, the one holding the sickle, she has her index finger of that hand placed right on the fucking tip of the sickle, like on a spot.
If she moved it in the wrong way, it would draw blood.
Yes, for sure. Exactly. And so I don't know what to make of that exactly, other than that, it just brings to mind for me, like, playing with danger, or, like, at least bringing to mind the idea that danger is, like, within my grasp at any time that I want it, right? And, so I don't know, like, just from my, like, personal experience, like, the thing that comes to mind based on like all the stuff we've talked about throughout her album is just like the opiate stuff. And then also like maybe like just grappling with death in this like this way that like existentialism seems present throughout the whole thing. But I don't know if you had thoughts about that.
I think I thought the same thing, that like it's this heightened awareness of the risk of life.
Yeah.
And like that, like the big picture is that there's some bad shit that happens and there's some good shit that happens. And like having her finger on the blade is like having her finger on the pulse.
Yes.
Of life in general. And like a willingness to kind of like accept whatever's thrown at her, especially thinking about this album as a whole and all of the shit that this narrator has gone through. Mm-hmm. You know, I think immediately of the fire in Only Skin, and like she's got her finger on the pulse of all of that, or like dropping the bell,
yeah,
blotting it out to see, like she's had a time.
She's had a time. Sam, I'm so into the way that you just put that. Like, just she has her finger on the pulse of all that it is, all that like life is, all the experiences that are encompassed within this giant of an album. And like that finger on that little point there, like somehow encapsulates that all really nicely. It's super cool and evocative. And I like that a lot. And like the danger even of like sex and love and...
Yeah. And a willingness to take all of that as it comes.
Yes.
In some way.
Uh-huh. And like almost a playfulness too. Right, she doesn't need to have her finger there, but she's doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Also, just real quick before we get on to the moth, which I think is the last, the moth in the frame probably. The last thing that I wanted to say just about the placement of all of this is that before, when you had mentioned like the communist flag and this being evocative of that, totally agree. And then you said like the hammer has been replaced with a moth, and I think that moths are that death is normally portrayed as a woman, but I'm actually not confident about that. Sorry. The thing that I wanted to say was, in some interview somewhere, I can't remember now if it was her or if it was the interviewer, described the death of her friend, which as we discussed is portrayed in Cosmia, they described that as like the hammer that set all of this into motion. And if we're supposed to be sort of like equating or associating the Cosmia moth with like the death of the friend, or like the significant death in this person, in the narrator's life, then it could just be like, look, this is a hammer, right? This replacement for the communist hammer is my personal kind of hammer.
And I don't know if we outright said this in Cosmia, but like the idea that the moth might personify the person who was lost as well.
Right.
That's incredible.
Also, did you notice there's like a teensy little nick in the sickle?
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that. There's like a very tiny little nick taken out of the sickle. It's been used before.
That's exactly what it made me think. Yeah. It made me think of very kind of bluntly, like, you know, we had compared in some episode the threshing of a seed to like a miscarriage or an abortion.
Yeah.
And the fact that the sickle has been used made me think of that.
Yeah, totally. Oh my God.
And this, like, before we move to the moth, like, this chair.
Yes. Oh, totally.
I want to say that it is like from the Elizabethan century. So, like, maybe 1558 to like 1603. And maybe that it's made of oak because that's what's popular at that's what was popular at the time. But I wish that I had more to say about like the faces.
I wish on the front I knew of it. How to even characterize that in the way that you've just done. Yeah. Good fucking job. I don't understand. It's so good. The only like I had no idea what time period in which to place this kind of style. The only note I had about two notes, I guess. The if you look at the arms of the chair, sort of like where your hands would go, there are two faces, like one on either side, one for each hand. And to me, they look like monkeys.
Oh.
You think?
I don't like that. I mean, yeah, I agree with you, but I don't like how that makes me
feel.
Yeah,
me either. It's super threatening. And it sort of feeds into this whole vibe that this album cover has going for it, which is like, there are these like domestic, comforting, nice seeming things like flowers and like, I don't know, like a nice little bird offering fruit and whatever, like a nice view outside the window. But then there are these like fucking violent things like a skull and like these like scary, like even if they aren't monkey faces, like just scary faces on the chair and like a big blade in the middle of it and bugs all over the flowers, right? This decay that's happening within this life.
And it's not a comfortable chair that she's sitting in either, right? Mm-mm. Like it has that kind of like mid-back height, but then there is nothing until like where you would sit. Yep. That part is all open. There's no cushion that we can see. It looks like kind of the supports under her arms.
They're like too wide for her too. Like they're like for a dude probably. And I think you're right. It does not look like a comfy chair. As she had said in that interview, like her posture is super stiff. She doesn't look comfy or relaxed.
No.
She's like at attention.
Very much so.
Like ready for.
Which is why that finger on the table is especially interesting.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. I like that. Yes. And then if you look up. Okay, follow the her left and our right, that monkey arm, if it is a monkey, I don't know. But follow that guy all the way up to like the back of her chair, but it's like the back whatever. And it looks like there's like either a leaf or a feather perhaps engraved in that. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
I don't know whether to think it's a leaf or a feather. I feel like either way we could probably make connections. The first thing that came to mind was like feather from like just all the fucking birds throughout this whole album, but also like the toothless hound dog choking on a feather, the dove.
And if it is a feather, like that contrasted with this like heavy ass wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, some kind of wood, heavy wood chair.
Yes.
Is really interesting too.
Yep. Little tufts of finch down. Yeah, I really don't. I like looked at it closer just now. I'm not sure. I think it probably is more feathery than leafy just because of, I don't see any like particular, like specific lines. I don't know. Sorry,
now that you say it's a monkey too, the way that its mouth is open is so threatening.
Yeah.
And the way that the light hits its eyebrows, its eyes, its cheeks, its nose.
Yeah.
Like this space above its mouth. And you can almost see like the lines of its tongue as well.
Yeah, its mouth is...
that's a bit much.
It's a bit much. Its mouth is open. It looks like it's like screaming, like berating, right?
Yeah, it's gaping in a way. Yeah.
Gaping
and yawning?
But not yawning, like pissed. It looks mad. This like masculine force being fucking policing and mad.
Like, wasn't there something about growling or like...
There was that, remember that amazing Blessing All the Birds longtime reader who had posted that thing for Monkey and Bear, which was like in the, like the Ursula, my heart is a furnace full of love. That's just an earnest.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah. The idea of that monkey growling is so scary though. Like it actually is a nightmare inducing.
And that, like, if you're sitting on that chair, that's where your fingers would sit as well. Like,
I don't like it. I know. It's really creepy. No. Really, really creepy.
Yeah.
To where your fingers would sit if you weren't grasping Cosmia, the moth, in your hand. And then this scythe. Yeah. Or this, sorry, no, sickle. Okay. Are we ready for the moth?
Yeah, and I think the only thing, I don't have a lot to say about this little moth. I think we said it in the Cosmia episode, but I believe anyway that this specific species of moth that is presented here is Cosmia trapezina. Mm-hmm. And this moth appears to have like a dusty red, kind of like reddy brown upper wings and a little striped body. And like a barely discernible light blue on its bottom wings there. Yeah. I think the most interesting part of this moth for me is like that circular, almost like pearl in its body.
Yeah.
That I want to compare to the moon and then to like the North Star in the sky immediately. But I don't know if that's, I'm going to look up a picture while you talk about your moth of this.
I kind of thought of that as a pin in the moth holding it to the frame.
Oh,
I know.
A pin light bent.
Oh, like a pin light bent. Like it might not be though. Like that would be like a really prominent pin actually to be stuck right through the moth's body like that. But I don't know how people normally frame moths and butterflies.
No, I'm not sure either.
The only thing I really had to say about it was just that it was, it's like behind a frame. So it's like in this like protected space of existence.
Oh, totally, yeah.
It, like, sort of separate from all of us. And also, what's the word? Like, immortalized there, kind of? Like, it's always going to be, there's, like, this impression that you, like, almost like a photograph. There's this impression that you have of something that is going to be constant throughout time. Yeah, I don't know, just, like, sort of represented there in this one way. No matter what happens to the thing's, like, spirit, it's just, like, this, like, representation of what that was.
Yeah, which I think is really sweet if we're thinking of it as you know, someone who was lost.
Yeah.
Kind of like remembering them as frozen in time.
Yes, exactly. That's a good way to put it. Frozen in time. Exactly.
And as I'm looking up pictures of this moth, it makes me think that this little guy who I thought was a caterpillar in the leaves here might be what's the word? The larva of the moth.
Oh.
Or something.
Yeah.
Climbing over there. Maybe not, but.
No, it totally might be, though. I have no fucking idea. sorry, just real quick. Speaking of bugs, I forgot that in the very bottom right corner of this picture, like very bottom right, underneath one of the morning glories, if that's what it is, sort of directly underneath the monkey's mouth, if you go all the way down to the first big leaf, there's a teensy tiny little bug there. And I looked up what bug that could possibly be, and I think that it's probably a beetle. My partner, David, helped me out with this because it was frustrating me. But I'm pretty sure it's a green beetle, and then I looked up green beetle symbolism, and let me just find my tab here. Right. So it is often symbolic of changes. So beetles in general are symbolic of changes. And then a couple places say that if you see beetle symbolism asks you to make changes in your life that do not necessarily comply with being true to yourself. It's letting you know you must evaluate the situation in its entirety so that you can find a way to compromise. So change is coming whether you want it to or not. And then also, about compromise being the only way you can maintain integrity and beliefs, also, more than likely, it could represent a predicament related to an unresolved family situation. So that could be a reference to perhaps Emily there, maybe. I don't know.
Sure, yeah.
Yes, I think that is all I had about the beetle. It seems like there's something else to me, but maybe not.
Wow.
All right.
I'm thoroughly satisfied that we made it through all of this because it felt like an uphill battle to find out any information about any of this.
It's so good. So, did you have anything to say about the frame?
I don't think so. Okay, no.
I couldn't figure out anything either. I hadn't even noticed it until you brought my attention to it. Yeah, okay. We fucking did it, Sam. That was hard. That was the hardest one so far.
I'm sure that you felt our pain. Heard the pain in our voices at the beginning of this episode.
And so throughout.
If this makes it to being released, please take everything we say with a grain of salt. Yeah, this was a really hard one.
It was a really hard one.
As much as I feel satisfied, like, having, you know, random thoughts about every aspect of this painting, much less so than when we analyze the lyrics.
Too.
I don't feel like I understand it
anymore. It feels so much less settled. You know what? Which, like, the album itself just makes me feel like also that same sort of, like, tipsy on not steady ground, change is happening, who the fuck knows, so maybe it's fine.
And we didn't even talk about any of the art inside the vinyl.
Dude, I like almost cannot make out a bunch of the art inside the vinyl. It's weirdly, there's no other credit, so it might be the same guy, but it just seems like such a different style.
I mean, it says at the back here, the painting was by Benjamin A. Vierling, which we mentioned, and the design was by Richard Good. But that's an episode separate from this, I'm sure.
Yeah, it says the painting by Benjamin A. Vierling, so not paintings or drawings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say it's a different person who did all the inside album artwork, but yeah, we can't even... who the fuck knows what's going on with those ones. But we did it, we made it. Oh my god, we were so scared about this episode, and like, I get it, I would be scared again if I had to do it all again. It's scary, and
I feel like I carried like such anxiety with me all day knowing that we had to present this to all of you.
God, me too. Yeah, and I think maybe we will, if it's okay with you, Sam, like, put this up as a, I don't even know what this means, but like, bonus episode would just make me feel like less pressure to make it like, like a good one.
Not that we like feel concrete in any of our analyses of the lyrics, but for some reason that kind of research just had like, I think you said it earlier that we just could put more of our like feeling into it. And because I've spent a lot more time with the music, I feel a lot more confident in my experience and my feelings of
exactly.
But, you know, I don't always look at the album cover while I'm listening, and maybe that's something I should start doing.
Right. Well, no, it'd be impossible though to do all this fucking research on like ancient Greek mythology, and like not just ancient Greek mythology, also all sorts of other fucking shit. It's just impossible to do all that while listening and appreciating the album itself. But yeah, like, that's exactly it, Sam, that like, when we're listening to the songs, like, we have our own touchstone of emotional as fuck experiences. It is the reason that we are here talking to you guys, like, this emotional experience that we've had with all of these different songs. The album is like, it's like throwing us into, the album artwork is throwing us into this, like,
spiral
uncharted territory, like, who the fuck knows what's going on. So if you guys are here still, like, yeah, and Sam, somehow we ended up talking about this still for 2 hours and 45 minutes. I don't understand what we're doing,
which is our shortest time yet, which doesn't surprise me, because instead of like, you know, 45 Google Doc pages, I have 9.
But I thought though that my few notes for this were gonna amount to maybe an hour of recording. I was legit concerned about that again, as I always am, and yet somehow never happens. Okay.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. I know we had a few requests when I asked for questions on the Instagram to do this one. So if you don't feel satisfied with these answers, please feel free to let us know. We have an email address. We would love if you sent us, like Nikki said, we're going to do Colleen next. And then what? boat after that. Have one on me, baby. Have one on me. So if you have thoughts, feelings, interpretations about anything to do with Have One On Me or Colleen, our email address is ahopelessendeavor, E-N-D-E-A-V-O-R @gmail.com. I do our Instagram stuff, which is A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. Nikki runs our Facebook group.
A Hopeless Endeavor, the Joanna Newsom Podcast. Yeah, thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you for listening. If you are here, please listen to Colleen, send us your theories about Colleen. And then I think that there are a ton of Have One On Me like super fans out there. So I am really looking forward to hearing your guys' thoughts and interpretations. Again, we're like soliciting stuff about not just Easy, which we're gonna start with, but like the album as a whole. If you want to have any if you have any like grand themes that you want to send us in, or if you just want to send us in stuff about songs that are coming up on Have One On Me, feel free to do that. We can archive shit probably.
Yeah, and don't worry about like organizing your stuff in any sense. Like if you want to send, I love the most when we get the most rambling nonsensical emails. Yeah. They're really fun to like tease apart and add to like our collection. So yeah, never worry about that.
Never.
We would love voice memos. Text anything.
Yeah.
Talk
to us.
Thank you.
We like it.
So much.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I am so fucking sad that this is the end of East. This is it.
I mean, I'm very glad to be done talking about Album Art. I'm sad that the album's
I'm
over,
good to be done sure. done talking about Album Art as well, but Jesus. Yeah, if you guys have questions about East, we would love to revisit it. You'd be doing us a favor were you to send us your questions about it. But
Yeah,
whatever. We'll see. So I think the next episode will be on Colleen. We will see you next Saturday. And by see you, I mean we will speak at you. but yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Yay, Sam. We did it. We did it.